Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a timely show, one I'm looking forward to. This is a return guest who I really enjoyed speaking with last time, and he's written an amazing article I think is very timely. We're going to speak with Mr. John Green. He's a political refugee from Minnesota, now residing in Free, Idaho. He's a graduate of Purdue University and spent 40 years doing product development, quality assurance, and strategic planning in the fields of railroad maintenance, oil exploration, and defense systems for the Army and Navy. As a retiree, he now spends his time writing social and political commentary. He's written for American Thinker, the Blue State Conservative, and the American Free News Network. And today we're going to speak about one of his most recent articles entitled, We Are Not Victims Unless We Choose to Be. I thought it was it spoke to me because I've been having this feeling for quite a while, and he was able to put it into a language that I think can speak to everybody, because we all now have to pull together and start handling our business, to put it mildly. So, Mr. Green, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks for having me. So am I.
Let's start from the beginning. What was the kernel that sparked this article? It's a lot of things going on, but was there something specific that made you say that enough is enough?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I spend my time now doing political and social commentary online, and I get a ton of email from people that read my articles, and I was starting to get an alarming amount of email from conservatives that sounded particularly pessimistic about the current state of our country. And it was starting to go kind of along the lines of, you know, our elections are stolen, the courts are corrupt, Congress is broken, deep state controls everything, we're powerless to do anything to stop any of it. And to me, that sounded like an awfully pessimistic outlook for our citizens to have. I started thinking about that and realized that even those of us on the conservative side of the spectrum are beginning to buy into this whole victimhood thing that the left has been pushing on us for a number of years. And that's a very disturbing development in my view.
Well, part of the thing that really struck me was I think nobody really realizes it, that it's inundated us, hasn't it? This feeling of learned helplessness or pointing the finger at somebody else, somebody's other, and they did something to you. And so therefore you can wallow in being a victim because you can't do anything. And it strikes me that it's from grade school now, through corporate America, through our interactions with each other. And it was never like that before.
No, I don't remember it being like that. You know, when I was a child in school, I was brought up in a scholastic environment where we were taught that we could be however successful we wanted to be. We just needed to be willing to work to achieve it. Now, if you hear the messages that our children are being taught and the messages that are being pushed in the media, you know, our lives are a mess because of the rich, the racists, the homophobes, sexists. You know, we're even being told that we're being victimized by climate deniers and hate speakers. And it just goes on and on and on. And it's like, and the central message for all of this is, and we need the government to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pushing a mindset on us that none of it is within our own control. And I think it's important to recognize that is only a mindset. That's the mindset of victimhood, to believe that we don't have control to fix things. Therefore, we need the government or people from that world to protect us from all these things. And the reality is, we have the ability to achieve whatever we want to in life, as long as we're willing to work hard enough for it. We have the ability to make our country better, as long as we're willing to work at it, to make that happen. And but that requires us to reject this mindset of victimhood that's been pushed on us for probably 40 years.
Well, it's gotten more sophisticated, hasn't it? And it's become more ridiculous. I saw an article online today about how eating chicken, you know, the way you eat chicken and whether you put salt on your food is racist. It just got so preposterous. I had to just turn it off because it was just, I'm not going to let that ruin my energy. But that's the level that we're at. It's so ridiculous. How do people really, I just have to ask, it's rhetorical, of course, but do people really buy this? Or is this the young people who really don't have a frame of reference, who are searching for anything, any excuse that will give them satisfaction of why their lives aren't where they want it to be?
Well, you know, I think there's a certain percentage of the population that are more than happy to accept those arguments because it's the lazy way to blame other people for your problems. The whole point of the article that we're talking about was, you know, it's time to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and get back to work. And you don't have to do that if you're comfortable just sitting back and blaming other people for all of your problems. You can go about your day just whining about how pitiful your life is, and isn't it too bad that everybody did that to you? And, you know, in your own mind, you can feel comfortable that you didn't do this to yourself. The point of the article we're talking about is, yes, we did do it to ourselves. And recognizing that is tremendously empowering, because once we recognize that we actually contributed to the current mess, then we take back the power to make it better going forward. It's not dependent on all of those other people that the left is telling us are victimizing us.
Well, you actually defined victimhood versus being a victim. And I think that was very powerful. Can you just, again, explain that to our listeners? Because it's a very nuanced way of looking at it, but extremely powerful in how you choose to move forward.
I was turning this over in my head, and I came to the realization that there's a very big difference between being victimized and accepting victimhood. If someone does something to hurt us, we've been victimized, and that's a physical fact. It's something that really happened. Victimhood, on the other hand, is a state of mind. It's a belief that these things happen to us because they're out of our control and we can't prevent it in the future. It's kind of a mental surrender, if you will. And, you know, when you hear people talking about having been victimized and recovered from it, you know, whether it's from an assault or a rape or any number of things where they could have been hurt by other people, they almost universally say, I refuse to be a victim. The ones that recover universally say that because they have taken the state of mind that, yes, something bad happened to me, but that doesn't define who I am, and that doesn't take my power away from controlling my future. But that is the exact opposite of the language of the left that we're hearing, which is telling us that all the problems you have are because of somebody else, and we can protect you from that.
I think that was just eloquently stated. And I want, when we come back from the break, I want to really delve into how do we make these choices? And I agree with you. There's a difference between what was mandated and what was law, and they weren't the same. So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. John Green, and you can read his articles that he's written on AmericanThinker.com. And before the break, Mr. Green, you made a wonderful analogy or statement about what it means to be a victim versus believing and having it happen to you. There are two different things, and you can come out the other side depending on your mindset. Now, over the last 3 years, we've all been through a lot, to put it mildly. And using that same mindset or that same theory, do you think that we actually there's people made choices. We weren't under martial law. People weren't getting their doors kicked in where we were being hauled off somewhere to be made to do something. And before the break, I talked about mandate. And a mandate is not a law. It's basically a command, I guess, but it's not legal. So with that mindset, do you think that we hastened down this path because people made a conscious choice to roll over to fear and have somebody take care of them as opposed to being able to stand up and make their own choices?
I do believe that. In fact, I've often referred to our COVID reaction as sort of our little test speed date with socialism. We decided to give it a little try and see how we liked it. And you talked about mandates, and yes, they were not formally passed as laws by either state legislatures or our own Congress. And yet our executives issued these mandates using the emergency powers that we granted them. And they actually canceled many of our constitutionally protected freedoms doing that. So there were people that were arrested for attending church, in mm-hmm. violation of the mandates. There were people that were arrested for violating curfews. We put restrictions on people's right to free speech, on people's right to free association, right to free religion, all of those things in the name of protecting people from the virus. That's how close we can come to accepting tyranny in exchange for the protection that the left is promising us. And it's a very dangerous thing, but we are taking baby steps in the direction of giving up our freedoms to people who want to impose control over us. And eventually that last baby step takes us right into tyranny. And once you get there, it's pretty hard to get out of it.
I absolutely agree. So with that, our little speed date, have we learned anything? Because I foresee that this is one of many times that they might try the same meme, the same ploy. How can we learn from this? Because obviously, I think everybody can, I would think, figure out by now that we're not safer. It didn't stop anything. It didn't stop it from spreading. And it ruined a lot of lives and the economy and the health of our population. So by, let's say they ring the bell again, are we really going to be Pavlov's dog and do the same thing? And if we, I think we're on the same plane of we need to be individuals instead. How do we open people's eyes to this, or are they opening?
Well, I tend to be a hopeless optimist, so factor that into what I'm about to say. But I actually think that we may have gotten more positive things coming out of the COVID pandemic than we got negative things. And the reason I say that is because look at the things that have resulted from the pandemic. Remote learning opened parents' eyes to what their children were being taught, and it has triggered a grassroots movement to take back the schools. Even though the red wave didn't really happen in the midterm elections, one of the little things that is not talked about much is that there were school board positions taken over by parents all across the country in a massive wave. And a lot of that is attributable to the COVID pandemic. You look at the fact that people are now pushing back and saying, wait a minute, you lied to us about the effectiveness of masks, vaccines, and all of these things. And people are waking up and they're starting to push back and say, wait a minute, I never agreed to give up my rights of free speech for this pandemic. And I never agreed to accept mandates for vaccines. And you're seeing a huge pushback now among people who are in hindsight looking at what happened in the pandemic and saying that was wrong. We need to investigate it. We need to find out what really happened, who was behind it, and never let it happen again. So I think it was a very eye-opening experience for a lot of people. And there's some unfortunate downsides to some of that, too. We had a number of institutions that sacrificed their credibility during a pandemic, and the medical institution is one of those. Mm. A lot of people now are looking at the CDC, the NIH, and even their own family doctors and saying, do I really trust what you're telling me now based on what I heard over the course of the last 3 years? And it has really damaged their credibility.
I would agree. I still think that the pendulum is still swinging still the wrong direction. I don't know. Recently, I guess today I read about, it's the Attorney General in Washington State wants to enact a law that would make it illegal for people to question the government, question the narrative. And I mean, they won't stop. It's not like, I think we have to be a lot more conscious in our choices, not only of who we will elect, but what we do and what we say. If we kowtow to that, that has a chilling effect on what you just described. Liberty and freedom are not just given to you. You have to earn them. Actually, you have to ask for them. You have to demand them. These guys don't care.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And we shouldn't be naive to think that the left is going to stop what they're doing just because they've been uncovered. I mean, back in the 1960s, they told us they were going to do a long march through our institutions, and they did it. And part of the mea culpa I was trying to make with the article I wrote was, I am among people who sat back and let them do it. They told us they were going to take over our schools, our corporations, our churches, our government, and they did it. And we did absolutely nothing to stop them from doing that. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's time to start doing something to turn that around. It'll take a long time, but it's certainly doable. Now, it would be naive of us to think that the left is going to stop doing those things. But luckily, people are not falling for it quite as quickly now. If you remember, just a couple of years ago, the Biden administration was planning on standing up the Disinformation Governance Board. Remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I do.
Right. And it died a sudden death, didn't it? Because the American people pushed back and said, wait a minute, we never agreed to this. So, you know, am I at all surprised that somebody in Washington wants to make it illegal to speak against the government? Not in the least. Do I think they'll pull it off? I think it's a lot less likely now than it was a few years ago.
It's like they have all these tentacles and you really have to be vigilant. And I think part of the first rule or first principle to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to take your stand about what you stand for, right or wrong, a moral stand, and live in it, right? So there's no moral relativism. It's either right or it's wrong. And, you know, there's a lot of ways that we've seen this roll out. I've heard of people being against physicians and healthcare professionals being against it, but still giving it to patients, but they won't take it or they won't let their families take it. That just seems to me, how do you parse that? Either you are for life or you're not. And those decisions that everybody makes, you know, I have to pay my mortgage. I understand all that. But does it come at the expense of someone else's life or livelihood? Where do you draw the line? Is that personal responsibility, is that the nucleus? Where do people have to live in their spirit, in their soul, in order to take the stand?
Well, I think personal responsibility is a big part of it. And of course, that's the one thing that the leftists don't want us to have. They don't want us to have the mindset that all we have to do is have the courage and the work ethic to achieve the things we want to, because that severs our dependence on them. You know, and things like speech control measures, you know, we're learning more about. Of course, the Biden administration wanted to implement a Disinformation Governance Board. We're now learning that the Department of Justice was actively involved in censoring people mm-hmm. on various social media platforms. We have various government officials. You just mentioned want to pass laws to make it illegal to talk about certain things. That is their way of controlling speech, which is another way of placing us all in victimhood status. You know, if you think about it, even the whole movement towards politically correct speech is just a way to say, you shouldn't talk like that. And it's a way to prevent different ideas from coming out. And it's another way to push us into a victimhood status. And the way we push back against that is exactly the way Donald Trump did. Talk about everything unabashedly and don't let anybody cow you into saying the thing, into not saying the things that need to be said just because you fear they'll call you a name because of it. That's a courageous thing to do in our society, because you can actually get your occupation canceled for doing that sort of thing. But that's exactly what we have to do in order to preserve our freedom. Our founders understood that it's not something that can be taken for granted or something that's free to have. They understood that they had to put their livelihoods and even their lives on the line to achieve it. And one of the things we need to do is recognize that there is some personal risk to us to maintain our freedoms, but it's necessary because freedom is that valuable. And I think that's what we've lost sight of.
I think you're right. And I mean, ultimately, being sometimes you can't be comfortable in it, but what's the alternative? To lose your freedom? You know, I think that would be, you're not coming, as you said a minute ago, you're not going to come back easily from that if you give up that degree of your autonomy and your power. You know, we're going to take a break in a minute or so, but I want to open up the conversation with the thought of, if we make our decisions based on what other people think instead of listening to our own self, you know, our relationship with God, those of us who have one, hopefully we all do, and having that supersede the government, that to me would be the easiest way to withdraw your consent and then use the power of the purse after that. So I want to start that conversation when we come back, but we'll take our second break first. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. John Green. And before the break, I tried to, you know, move the conversation into solutions. I mean, ultimately, they do what we let them do, is what you're describing, right? It's, we just ceded our power and hope for the best and have something take care of us. But ultimately, they only have the power because we give it to them, right? So is one of the ways that we can get our power back economic? Should we withdraw our consent and not buy from these corporatists and play the game that makes them richer and helps them lord over us more?
Absolutely. Because what they're going to do, I mean, if you buy products from some of these corporations that are trying to push leftist ideology, they're going to use the money to advance their ideology. And that is absolutely contrary to where many of us are coming from. Look, the left said that this was a multi-decade project for them, and it was. And they're getting dangerously close to completing that project now. So we need to look at it as a multi-decade project to take our country back. And we need to do the things like teaching our children to be good citizens. We need to preach to our friends and family about the virtues and the costs of freedom. We need to campaign for politicians that share our values, boycott companies that fund the corrosion of our society, get involved in politics ourselves, especially at the local level. You know, I mentioned before, there actually was a bit of a red wave last November, but it happened in city halls and school boards across the country. Parents that were concerned took over city hall seats and school board seats across the country. Well, guess what? That actually has a bigger impact on our personal lives than our politicians in Washington, D.C. do. And we can all get involved in those things. And above all, we need to push back on this America is evil message that we keep hearing. We need to recognize that America has had its faults, and still does, but it's still a place of pride, not a place of shame. And we can celebrate America and at the same time get ourselves to making it better every year. But that does not mean throwing away what our founding principles were.
I think we need to define them again. It's, everything has had themselves defined by this monolithic entity. I don't care if it defines what a woman is all of a sudden. It defines what being Black is all of a sudden, what being an American is. I mean, everything is just being turned really upside down. And I have to give an example, because another thing that just really just irked me was some NBA team was celebrating Women's History Month by saying women have children and, you know, they're part of the future of humanity, and they got nailed because they said women can have children. I mean, what is wrong with people that they can't? I'm like, what is, just, it's just sick. And they apologized and withdrew the statement. That's just idiotic.
Yeah, they should have never apologized. That whole thing comes from the gaslighting we received from the left and the media, which is confusing sex and gender. You know, and sex is what you biologically are, and gender is how you emotionally choose to live. And just because you're a woman and choose to live as a man does not make you a man. And that doesn't, you know, and when we set up women's sports separate from men's sports and women's locker rooms separate from men's locker rooms, it was based on an understanding of the differences of sex. Mm-hmm. And now we're trying to say gender and sex are synonymous. So if a man says, I want to live as a woman, then we say, okay, now you've got a woman's sex. No, they don't. That's not the science of it. I'm sorry. That's just not what it is. And when you say, oh, by the way, he can use a woman's locker room, now we're infringing on somebody else's rights. And that's a problem. But we can't seem to clarify that in a way that makes sense for our society, because the left simply won't let us talk about it in rational terms. If you try to say those things, you'll be called a homophobe, a misogynist, a racist, and the whole thing is intended to shut down the dialogue rather mm-hmm. than come to a rational understanding about how our society wants to interpret these things.
You're taking the heat and light out of it and just being rational, but that means that people can think and they don't automatically just go to their tribe and start fighting it out. I think, is this by design, so that we just live as emotional creatures veering from one emotional catastrophe to the next while it's moving forward? And all this left and right and conservative, liberal, I wonder too, are all these labels, first of all, are they really real? Some people can be both, right? They have a conservative bent in some aspect of their life and they're liberal in others. So to actually just keep pigeonholing people makes it easier to divide and conquer, doesn't it?
It does, and I rebel against it. A lot of these political categories, you know, liberals become a dirty word, but the reality is liberal means that we recognize people's liberties. The classic definition of liberalism is protecting people's civil liberties, like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association, and so forth. But somehow that's been perverted into, now it means progressivism, which means leftism, which means we're on a path to socialism. You know, so it's really hard because of the way we've distorted the language to discuss these things. And you almost have to kind of avoid those political characterizations, mm-hmm. but it's really difficult to do sometimes and still maintain dialogue.
I mean, I agree. It's you almost have to watch trigger words, you know, that you don't want to engage that side of folks because you know that the conversation will be over, or you might be attacked, or you'll be somehow removed from society if they could do it, whether that's take your bank account, take your social media presence, even take your job. So,
yep.
I mean, ultimately, we've allowed bullies to rule. And the only way to fight a bully is to confront them, really. I can understand, right. You know, not being too laid back. You have to protect your own rights in a reasonable manner, honestly. But is it about starting from scratch with little kids and trying to educate them? Because, I mean, are we able to do it to people who are adults already, who've already been mind controlled in this manner? How do you reach them? Because it's a lot of society. I don't think it's a majority. I think they're louder. And other people just want to go along and just not hit friction. But that silence makes them seem more powerful.
It does. And it's going to take courage to push back on that. Look, I personally don't want to offend anybody. But at some point, you can't talk candidly about the issues without running the risk of offending some people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's where this movement toward politically correct speech has taken us. It's really taken us in the direction of censoring us. We can't have candid dialogue. And it's all based on emotion, which takes us back to the victimhood thing. Mm-hmm. But I believe that we can overcome that relatively easily by talking to our children. Now, it's going to take 20 years for the next generation to grow up and be productive citizens in this society. But hey, the left has taken 60 years to bring us to this point. So we shouldn't balk at needing another 20 or 30 years to return to where we want to be. I can give you a really good example. My 10-year-old granddaughter was over a few months ago, and we were talking about what she was learning in school, and she told us that they had learned that sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. And she had learned that that's the wrong statement, that words really can hurt you. And I said, what do you mean? And she says, hate speech can really hurt you. Hate speech is really bad. And I asked her, you know, do you have any examples of hate speech? And she said, no, but if we say things that are mean to other people, that really hurts them. I said, okay, well, let me give you an example. Would you say Black Lives Matter is hate speech? And she said, no, absolutely not. I said, I agree. Would you say All Lives Matter is hate speech? And she said, of course not. And I said, no, it is, by the definition of some people. And that's when a light went on for her. And she said, All Lives Matter is hate speech? And that's when she realized, well, maybe we shouldn't tell people they can't say certain things, because if we try to regulate what people can talk about, we're going to take away the abilities to say some things that are obviously honest and true. And that was an epiphany for her.
Wow. That was amazing breakthrough. So easy.
And it turns out it's really easy. She and I talk about politics all the time. And she's 12. She was 10 when we had that discussion.
Well, I wonder what it's like for children. And now that you talked about your granddaughter, there seems to be a real, I don't know, it's not a safe place if you're not a minority child at this point. It's, you're just by the color of your skin, you're the enemy, and you did something to somebody. As an adult, that's hard enough, but I can't even imagine being a child in that environment. How do you speak up? How do you stand up for your own human rights when you're, by definition, the enemy of your classmate? That doesn't even make sense to me.
Problem.
Yeah.
That is the problem, isn't it? So we have people that we're classifying as oppressed, even though they've never been oppressed, and people we're classifying as oppressors, even though they've never oppressed anybody. And those are the lessons we're teaching. The only positive thing I can say is that scholastically, that ship is beginning to turn. Parents are getting involved in the education of their kids more and more every day. And we made the mistake in letting that infiltrate our schools, either because the schools were too non-transparent for us to see what they were doing, or we were too lazy to go audit the curricula. But that's changing now, and parents are getting involved. And I believe that we're going to see a radical change in direction on some of those things over the course of the next generation, thankfully. So it's not all hopeless. We allowed some very evil things to creep into our schools, and now we're ready to do something about it.
I from your lips to God's ears on that. I mean, those are such vulnerable people, children. I mean, they depend on support, and to be fair and to be supportive. And you can, you don't even know how you damage children when you take that away from them. Black, white, green, and everybody suffers. I don't care what color they are. So you've got an angry group. You've got people who feel maligned. I mean, this is going to come out to adulthood at some point. So let's take our last break, because I'd love to delve further into that when we come back. So we'll take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. Now, Mr. Green, I know you write for theamericanthinker.com. Where else can people read your what you write?
I actually have articles that appear on the American Free News Network as well. And sometimes the articles get picked up by some other places, but those are the two primary places that I write.
Now, from the your granddaughter's point of view, I mean, when you first talked to her, how alarmed were you? I'm sure you tried not to let her see your face when she was saying this, but what did you feel? I mean, that was just something very gut-wrenching. Potentially, she could have said, I'm the problem, and she could have internalized it. Thank God she had support. But what about children who don't?
Well, yeah. And think about what sort of mindset we're instilling on minority children when we tell them, you are oppressed, you are oppressed, you are oppressed. And we say it over and over and over. Are we building a mindset where they believe that they can be self-reliant, that they can achieve whatever they want with hard work and ingenuity? Or are we indoctrinating them into this ideology of victimhood, where the message is, you're oppressed, there's nothing you can do about it, and you need us to protect you?
It doesn't create a person who's self-reliant. It doesn't create a happy person. And it also creates someone who I think can be very self-damning and also create a lot of havoc for society as well. And it's the most racist thing to tell somebody, because of what you look like, you can't do. I don't understand how people don't make that connection between the tenets of liberalism. And it's not just what you look like, it's what sex you are. If you're a woman, you can't do, you know, it doesn't even make sense. But these people buy into it, and they, it almost like it's a, it gives them notoriety and credibility and somehow boosts them. It's very schizophrenic in a way. You're special because you're a victim, but through no other fault except what you look like or how you were born. That doesn't make sense at all.
No, it doesn't. But that, but you have to admit that's exactly what's being pushed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the bigger a victim you are, the more you're regarded in our society now. It's almost like we've got the victim Olympics going on or something. And that's to be the exact opposite of what we should be teaching children, to be teaching them self-reliance,
mm-hmm.
that they do have the power to control their future, not that they're powerless, unless your objective is to develop a generation of socialists.
Now, from their mindset, you know, I think we need to, again, visit this socialism versus living in a democratic society. They've conflated socialism with democracy, which is not the same thing.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, we live in a democratic republic, and we believe in, or our founding principles are based upon capitalism and property ownership and that sort of thing. Socialism is just a mile marker on the way to communism. So socialism is when you say, we need to take a bunch of stuff away from private individuals. We need to violate their property rights and give that stuff to some other people. So we are socially redistributing it. The problem is, as Margaret Thatcher pointed out, socialists always run out of other people's money to spend. And so the way they fix that is they start taking more and more and more. So if you take the socialist path, or the socialist fork in the road, if you will, you eventually either reach communism or you have to change paths and go back to capitalism. Socialism never leads to some third destination that works for everybody. It just doesn't work that way. It puts you on a path where you progressively have to take more and more and more away from the private entities and invest it in the public entities until you eventually wind up with the public owning all of it.
Now, isn't this a little, is there another side to this where instead of it's the private entities, it's the combination of the government and the corporate structure, you know, this fascism essentially, where it's always a public-private partnership where you get rid of all your competition and you're the only game in town. So therefore you set the price, you set the parameters while you give money to the government entity so they stay in power. It's just sick. I mean, is this another way?
That's the crony capitalism.
Right.
Which eventually leads to the same place. You know, in crony capitalism, the capitalists get in bed with the government to get special favors to push their competition out and give them a monopoly position. But eventually the government has to start taking away from those corporations as well, because if the more you create dependency on the population, for the population on the government, you progressively have to take more and more out of the private sector, even if it's the corporate private sector. Those corporations may think they have a partnership with the government, but the government will violate that in a heartbeat when they need more.
Gotcha.
And these CEOs that think that they can get in bed with the government and get regulations that will give them, you know, advantages into perpetuity, they're just being naive if they think that will last.
I guess Disney is an example of that then, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it though? Also a perfect example of boycott the companies that are pushing ideology that you disagree with.
Exactly. So from the, it also seems too that, yes, they keep robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, raise the taxes, etc. And they pit us against each other. So we're spending so much time hating on each other while they vacuum all of our resources and our wealth, technically. Is that something, another side effect of this COVID, you know, pandemic that we dealt with? Was there a transfer of wealth from small businesses, from people who were running their own lives and given to the corporate structure? I mean, Amazon grew a massive amount. Everything was buying online. The healthcare profession was completely decimated. I think there's only 30% individual private practice doctors before the pandemic. That's probably a fraction now compared to what it was.
Yeah.
And it's all corporatized and standardized, and forget about privacy and individual pursuits at this point because you can't afford it or because you're just not, you're basically out of the picture.
Well, we redistributed a lot during the pandemic, and we broke a lot during the pandemic. You know, for instance, look at the businesses that were allowed to stay open, the Walmarts, the Costcos, the Amazons, and yet we shuttered the mom and pop hardware store and the mom and pop bakery and the mom and pop convenience store. And we kept them shuttered anywhere from 2 weeks to several months.
Mm-hmm.
And those small businesses simply couldn't survive that. You mentioned Amazon. The number I read was that Amazon added over 500,000 employees during the pandemic. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
500,000 employees were added because of their increased sales during the pandemic. And that was all because our leadership decided to just let them stay open and force their competition to close.
It's just putting your finger on the scale, ultimately. Now,
yeah, and we're doing the same thing in the name of climate change and in the name of controlling hate speech and you name it.
Well, at some point, first of all, it will affect everybody. So people who think they're part of a special group, they're going to have a rude awakening I don't believe they will be, but if they would, in their minds, accomplish what they want, they're coming for these folks next. And that goes for the media and for everything else, whether it's the legacy media trying to shut down alternative internet-based independent media. They're not free either. So, I mean, in the minute that we have left, I want to make sure that, one, finish your thought on, I think you did a wonderful job. I don't think there's anything else left to say. It's up to us to make our decisions. But what is the one thing that people need to do to start this process?
I think the one thing they need to do to start this process, and that's kind of what I tried to allude to in the article, is take ownership for our past mistakes. That's one thing that I am not hearing from many of the conservatives that I get correspondence from. They are still blaming people on the other end of the political spectrum for all of the problems we have. And my point is, they were only able to create these problems because we allowed them to. Mm-hmm. We knew it was happening, and we still were too busy to deal with it, and we let it happen. So I think to realign our thinking, we need to say, you know, it's just like the person that has a substance abuse problem, stand up and say, I did it. It's my fault. And I think we need to stand up and say, we allowed these people to infiltrate our schools and our institutions. It's our fault. And as soon as we say that, it's also a declaration that we have the power to fix it. If we had the power to let it happen, we also have the power to fix it. And that gets our head turned in the right direction. Then go talk to our kids, go talk to our school boards, put our feet down with corporations that are using our money for nefarious purposes, and start taking back influence over the things that are directing our society.
I think that's a wonderful place to stop that call to action. Once again, how can people read what you write?
Most of my stuff shows up on American Thinker, which is AmericanThinker.com, and also on America Free News Network, which is AFNN.us.
Mr. Green, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I think we had an important and an honest conversation, and I couldn't agree with you more. Everybody needs to look themselves in the mirror and be honest. And if that can happen, I think we're well on our way to getting our lives and our country back. So thank you very much for everything you do.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our talk.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.